Author Talk with me, Amy, Sandy, Valerie, and Humphrey Hawkins is joining us today. So let's all dive into our weekends. You guys know the drill and how we do things. So I've had just a crazy whirlwind of things go down. So last Monday, when we all spoke, I was at my mother's because we were celebrating my granny's 90th birthday, which actually really isn't until April, but she came down to visit and it was so great. I took off later that afternoon to Dallas, which is almost 5 hours, or Irving, technically, 5 hours from my parents' house. And let me just tell you, okay, 5 hours alone with two children under the age of five is torturous. Torturous. It's the longest car ride I've done by myself with my children. And motion sickness was involved for some random reason. So we pulled off at a random Bucky's. I don't even know where this Bucky was. It was not the New Braunfels one that I'm used to. Got some motion sickness medication for them. Then we decided the next day that my youngest needed to also have strep. So why not travel and have more strep spread across this family, right? And I forgot Meadow's medication at my mom's. So I've learned a lot about doctors and transferring prescriptions to new locations whole week. I'm telling you, it was a lot of fun.
You were wanting to learn all that stuff.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Diving into this full on, right? But on a happy note, right, we got to all spend Valentine's Day together, which was the whole point of driving up there, doing all that. And so I took the girls to the zoo. I posted some photos earlier. You guys can go and look at my page. But the zoo had a baby gorilla that was born maybe a year ago, 6 months to a year ago. And my girls were at the looking glass, and the baby gorilla came flying to the glass and was playing hide and seek and was putting his hands up with my daughters and was playing with them. So I have a video of it, and I will post it. But it was one of the cutest things to kind of have. I've never seen that kind of interaction, so it was fascinating to see. And my girls were in their pink little dresses that, you know, we just had to have. So, and don't tempt me, okay? I love Target, Humphrey. And so they had a super Target. So, you know, we had to go there while we were, you know, road tripping and doing all of these things. But we've made it back. My children are still alive. Sometimes I feel like that's my greatest accomplishment, is they are still alive at the end of the day. So it's been a whirlwind of experiences and fun times, to say the least, but memories were made, which is what is the most important. So I hope everybody else had less of a whirlwind of a weekend. So who wants to go first? And let's talk about everybody's weekend. Valerie, do you want to go first?
I sure can. And just for FYI, Amy, we've all been there. And so we can totally relate. And it's we're just giving you like little hugs. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. But it is true. You have memories, and it will carry you through till the next time you have a giant adventure.
Adventure. Let's just call it that. Adventure is a good word, Valerie.
Giant. And with children, every day is some kind of adventure.
Every day, yes.
Ain't that the truth? Yes, indeed. So, Valerie, what did you do this weekend?
Well, I got invited to participate in the Saturday Series Kids event with Houston designer David Peck, and which was an amazing opportunity because I'd never done anything like that. And he has all these different events. So it was a kids event. So he invited me to come read the donut tree. And River Oaks Donuts was so generous. They supported us with lots of donut holes. And we had a live Instagram feed and all of that. So we were reading the donut tree, sharing all that. It was a great, great time. There we are. Look at all those donuts, friends. How can you have a donut?
Oh my gosh, I love it. Who doesn't love a good donut? Who doesn't love
a good donut? Yes. So the kids loved it. The audience, the grown-ups loved it. But it was great to just, you know, experience that live reading. Just share the whole story behind the donut tree.
I love it. And there's no other, you know, good book than the donut tree to have that kind of experience with. I'm telling you, I'm a 32-year-old and I still love this book. I read this book on my own, whether my kids want to or not. I'm like, I'm reading this book. It just makes you happy, right? At the end of the day.
Yes,
and the experiences that you have, I feel like, is what a lot of authors have or want, aspire to have those opportunities at some point. So I love it.
Yeah, it just, you know, what it usually happens, like one thing leads to another and you're like, yeah, let's do this. And and that's how it usually evolves.
I love it.
Valerie, you're such a marketing person because you have Every time I hear you, you've had some wonderful opportunity that I've never heard of an author having before. So I think that's awesome. I'm going to hang out with you one day.
Come on, we'll have donuts. We'll have donuts.
You had me a donut, okay? You had me a donut. It didn't matter what we were doing. As long as I have a donut, we're good. Golden, true. For sure. Humphrey, what did you do this weekend?
I don't know. I'm on the other side of the pond, so we have whole different psychology on this. So I have to congratulate you, Amy, on your good parenting.
Thank you.
And I have to say that you drive 5 hours in the States, and you just get from one small town to the next.
Yeah.
You drive 5 hours here, you know, and you're in the sea or you're in Scotland or something like that. So it's a whole different, and you're mostly in a traffic jam. So it's a whole different experience there. And on the donut front, I mean, we get stuff in the newspapers every day saying you can't eat donuts because they will, your sugar levels and your this levels and your, do you get that over there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but you still
go ahead and use it. And so giving, I'm not sure what the rule is, but giving your child donuts, I guess, might be child abuse over here or something. I'm not sure, but you've made me think about it.
It was a treat. It was a party. We were just.
Yeah, well, but you seem to party all the time, Valerie.
Sometimes.
You look like
sometimes.
A party girl to me.
Yes, yes. That's how Amy know and Sandy know me.
So
that's donuts every day.
Every yes. day.
Yeah.
Hey,
or something I would do it just if I could. The equivalent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But are they bad for you? I don't know. We don't have donut shop here so much.
They claim to be, but they taste too good to be bad for you, is my opinion. But they do claim to be bad for you.
Yeah. And you're all really healthy.
It's okay to eat the donut holes. The donut holes have no
They're
calories.
Smaller. Donut
oh, you eat the hole
smaller.
In the donut.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what we had at the party. We had donut holes, so it wasn't as bad.
It's smaller. Yeah,
it's small like that.
And a bagel has a hole too, doesn't it? In it. As
yeah.
Well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A polo mint. Do you have polo mints over there? They're a candy. They've got a hole in them. Maybe they just make all these things with holes in them to. Make them cheaper.
Make you feel less guilty about eating it because it's technically not a hole. There's a hole in it, so you're not eating the full amount.
The full amount.
Okay. I'll go and investigate this. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. You've given me a project now.
Oh, good.
So, what do you do on the weekends?
Well, I don't do weekends.
Oh, okay.
We just have a flow of life, the elixir of life winds round and round and round.
I love that. It was on a British film that I was watching when the person who is, you know, royalty, and somebody said, "We're going to go here for the weekend," and she turned to the person next to her and said, "What's a weekend?" So my husband and I say that to each other all the time. We're retired, and we're like, "What's a weekend?"
Yeah, and you know when you, I don't know if you have it over there, when you have these call centers and they say that they're going to get something to you, they say within five working days or something, they say, or something like that. You know, what's a working day now? Everybody sort of works from home and
so
they
true.
Answer emails all time of things. I don't know what a working day is. Is it 24 hours or what?
Exactly.
It's whatever they want it to be, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
That is so true. That is so true. Because I know I spent all day yesterday working.
No. I mean,
we do weekends here, but I think that I've always been of a type that doesn't like to do that 9 to 5, knock off on Friday, back on Monday thing. And then everybody feels so bad to be back at work on Monday. But I actually like my work. So. It's a strange psychology that the weekend thing, but we have given that word to the French because they don't have a word for weekend because they don't work at all, so they just say le weekend, you know.
I love it. I have to have my one or two days in of just family time, right?
Because that's different.
And what,
yep.
And what I do, Humphrey, what me and Mickey do are very similar in what we do, but we're, especially dealing with different time zones, we're kind of on call all the time. So I have to have, you know, that day or two of family time where I just put everything on, you know, do not disturb and go about my day, which I have come to find is incredibly difficult to do, you know, because you're always like, oh, well, let me just check my email really quick. But to have that undivided family time for me, just because my kids are so little right now, is really important. So I have to take my weekends, which is generally mostly just a day and a half. It's like half of Friday and Saturday and Sunday I'm back doing
it. Well, you have to, because with kids you have the school and you have the community and everything. So that is the weekend, is family time there. And that is it. And I think it was Mickey who emailed me during the weekend to ask whether I could do this show. And I presume that Donald Trump or somebody else had pulled out at the last minute. And of course I said yes.
Yes, absolutely. No, I love it 100%. Well, you guys, if you haven't noticed already, Russell's not with us today.
Hello. I didn't get
that. Oh, I know. I'm sorry. Sandy, your weekend. Go.
And only because we had a special weekend in that a friend of ours who is from Lake Charles, which is Louisiana, now lives in Houston, and she came over to teach my husband how to make gumbo. Woo! So we spent the entire day yesterday with them in the kitchen making the roux and all of this. And so by the end of the day, then we all had our gumbo with rice and with potato salad, because in Lake Charles in Louisiana, they put a scoop of potato salad in their gumbo. So it was we had the most fun yesterday just playing with them while they were cooking and then eating our gumbo.
What is gumbo?
Oh, it's heaven. It's heaven. It's heaven.
Cajun, you eat
it's
heaven.
A Cajun dish.
A Cajun soup.
Yeah, it's a soup that has like Cajun spices. They make it a lot down in like Louisiana, but it's a
very rich, dark broth.
Yeah, it has everything that you can imagine. It's some put shrimp and crawfish and potatoes sausage in it. Others, you know, don't go that route and put different things in it, but it has like a kick to it. With a Cajun flair. So a spice with the, it's pretty much like a dump it all in there soup that's spicy. That's the best way to
okra, describe it. It's got the trinity of onion, celery, parsley, and then people put okra in it.
Well, thank you. So if I go into the Creole restaurant, Cajun restaurant nearby and ask them for a gumbo, they might have to make something because they don't think we know what it is, but now we do.
No, you know what it is.
Yes, absolutely. Sandy, I love that. I haven't had gumbo since.
That is so awesome, Sandy.
What we're going to do now that husband knows how to make it is he's going to make it by himself, and we'll make sure you guys know when you can come by and have a bowl with us.
Nice. Okay.
Send some over, DHL.
I will send you some. Humphrey.
Thank you, Sandy. I look forward to that.
You have
and
to
I will hold you to it too.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, you guys, Russell is not here today. If you have not already noticed that, he is doing his husband duties, is what I like to say, and driving Melinda where she needs to go in Nashville so she doesn't have to drive by herself. So I applaud Russell for this, and I love it. I absolutely love it. So I will be doing Russell's part today, which is telling everyone that we are top 10 in independent book podcasts. We're really excited about it. We've been doing this for 8 years. Russell always knows better than me. I'm going to say 8 years. Sandy was a part of the OG establishment of Author Talk when it was her and Russell at his place in downtown Houston, and I would flip the camera over now and then. Now look what we have evolved to and what we have become. We've spoken to so many amazing people within the writing community and publishing industry, and a lot of creative authors that have a story behind the story, which Sandy is very well known for, that I have adopted. So we are incredibly humble. We thank all of you guys. So Humphreys, a lot of people listen to us rather than watch us, though they are free to watch us and engage with us on all of our social media platforms or to talk with any one of us. We like hearing their questions and interacting with them, but they listen to us throughout the week, as Russell likes to say, while they're working out, driving, whatever, because like you pointed out, 5 hours, we're still in Texas. We're only in the next city, right? So they can listen to us all that they want. But if you want to go to our YouTube channel or on any of the podcasting sites, Amazon Music, Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, Google, anywhere that you can listen to a podcast, you can hear all of our episodes, even back from 8 years ago, our very first episode to what we have evolved in today. So you can go pop on over and do that, but make sure you come over to our social media channels. We do like engaging with you, answering questions, popping in, letting you guys feel like you're a part of the conversation while we're live in time, because I control what comes out of my mouth, but not my facial expression. So if you want a good laugh and a chuckle, make sure to come on over there. You can laugh with us or at us. We generally are laughing at and with ourselves or at ourselves. So come on over and join us over there. But don't forget that the Women in Publishing Summit is happening in March. I am a sponsor again this year. I will be doing a 1 hour like Q&A workshop about it, or about what I'll be talking about there. So if you want to come and check it out, I know the title says Women in Publishing, but it's not just for women. Authors, publishers of all realm are welcome. Gender, all of that is welcome. You learn a lot of amazing and important things, whether you're a seasoned author or dabbing your toe into becoming an author. So make sure that you go and you check all of that out. I'm sure there's other things coming up. That's just the one thing on my mind, because an email popped up and they popped up. Okay, that's just how things roll sometimes. But without further ado, Humphrey, let's get you talking about your amazing career and your writing that you currently have, and what is next coming up for you and the show that you currently have. So, Valerie, it's all you, girlfriend.
All right. Humphrey, can you just go ahead and tell us about your genre and how did you become interested in this, first of all?
I'm a journalist. My DNA is journalism, and my journalism DNA is foreign corresponding. And I've been doing that for years and years and years, probably since before Amy was born. And that's why she's better at parenting. But at some stage, when you're on that news cycle that goes round and round and round in circles, and it's getting more and more oppressive in a way, things coming in all the time. We were talking about needing a break. I thought that I wanted to write books, because you can get beneath a lot of what's going on in a book, either in a fiction story or in a non-fiction story. So I've done both and do both. And my latest, the latest thing I've been looking at is that I've got, well, in fact, I'm always writing about three books at once. I don't know about you guys, but you know, you're doing one and then you're editing the other one, and then the agent's talking about something else, and you're doing all this stuff. But I've got I did a book called Asian Waters, which was about the rise of China and why we might be coming into conflict with China and how all that meshes together. Then I updated it, and I am doing a third updated edition of that. And that is basically a primer for anybody that wants to know. You know, you read in the New York Times that China said something or the US has said something, but if you're going out there to Asia at all, the Indo-Pacific, they call it now, they dip into that book, they can see why Indonesia matters, or why Vietnam is, after being bombed to hell by America, is now an American ally. How does that all make sense? You know, apocalypse now, and then what do we have? Everybody's shaking hands. And then at the moment, I've got a four book thriller series, which is based from a hero in the Arctic. And that came from a BBC assignment I was on several years ago. It was when Russia first invaded Crimea. And then after that died down, I thought, I need to go to the Russia-American border. I want to see this place where these two nuclear superpowers are sort of face-to-face. Of course, when you say face-to-face, it's not like Checkpoint Charlie or the Mexican border. There's nothing there. I mean, you know, there's a wilderness and there's sea and everything, but there are two islands. So the actual mainlands are about 50 miles apart. You've got Siberia on one side and you've got Alaska on the other. But then within that, you have two islands. And one of them is a Russian military base. It's called Big Diomede. And then 2 miles across the water, there's Little Diomede. And that is a native Alaskan village of about 80 people on it. It has no roads. It has no hotels, no restaurants, nothing.
Were you there?
Yeah, I went there and I was meant to be there for a filming trip that would be an overnight trip. So with a helicopter, you had to charter a helicopter to go in. So you chartered the helicopter to go in, dropped us. It was going to pick us up the next day on what was meant to be the mail run. So we landed there and then I didn't get out for 10 days. Because the fog came down. This happens quite a lot. And I lived with the islanders for 10 days, sleeping on a floor in the school, waking up every morning and looking at Russia, looking at a Russian military installation. And I don't know if, Amy, you'd be far too young. Sandy, you might know. Do you remember that politician called Sarah Palin?
No.
So Sarah Palin.
I think we all remember her.
Yeah, I was kidding that. Sarah Palin, when she was running for vice president, said in an interview that Americans can see Russia from their backyard, and she was completely castigated. They tore to shreds because she knew nothing about foreign policy. Americans see Russia from their backyards. You wake up every morning, you look out the window, and there is Russia. And 2 miles with that clear Alaskan sky with no pollution at all, you can almost reach out and touch it. Wow. And what's amazing about this island is that, as I said, there's nothing on there, but there's also no military on there. There's no customs posts. There's no police even. There's no big guns and there's no flags and there's no border marking. Because traditionally, I think, during the Cold War, Moscow and Washington, they wanted to keep it a quiet border. They didn't want anything to flare up there. But if the fishermen, and they know it very well, that if they go out too far on their boats there, the Russians warn them to get back. And if they don't get back, they can be arrested. And from that trip, because I was there for 10 days, I sketched out a thriller with a hero that came from the island. I thought, you know, when you're planning a book, you wonder who's going to be the protagonist in it. And you think of an ex special forces person or this, that. And I went through that and I thought, well, this is nuts. The person that is going to be the hero is in these people I've been living with because they are so tough, so rugged, so smart, and so at one with the environment that nobody could be better than them. And they'd also... They have a military group called the Eskimo Scouts. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was the people that protected. They were the native Alaskans that protected America at that time. They served in Iraq, and they had one hell of a reputation as soldiers. So I thought, well, I'll make one of them. And I had a scenario which has been picked up and discussed is what would America do if Russia just came in and took this island, because they could.
Yeah.
They could just land helicopters there and take it. And then I set it during an acrimonious presidential transition, like Obama to Trump or Trump to there have been through. So there's two policies that are totally different. And there's a couple of days when they're going to change on January the 20th when the inauguration is going to change. And that became a book called Man on Ice, which I thought was going to be a standalone. And then the publishers wanted another one. So we've had the hero Ray Kazena saving the world through in all sorts of obscure places around.
So you have 4 books in that series, right?
There are 4 in that series, yeah. And I'm working on another nonfiction at the moment. Like I said, I'm updating. Then I'll do a 5th and a 6th, as many people want. Yeah.
And can you tell us the locations of all 4 books?
So the first one was where I said that's on the Bering Straits, which is the U.S.-Russian border. The second one is on the Norway-Russian border, which is where NATO, the European NATO, actually has a border with Russia. I actually wrote it before the whole Ukraine thing happened, but it's about a guy trying to smuggle some military submarine secrets across the border and all sorts of problems emerge, including a rake's fiance, on-off girlfriend. When you have two, I'm sure you ladies will know this, when you have two sort of very career-orientated people or hardworking people, and one half of them wants to do their job and the other half of them wants to settle down and have kids and that sort of thing, never quite works, but yes, they're soulmates. So you have a sort of on-off thing that you understand mm-hmm. it's not going to work. And once you start painting the white picket fence together, it's all going to fall apart. Well, that's the sort of relationship Rake is mm-hmm. in. And he's a native Alaskan American. His soul, his hearth is the island of Little Diomede. Carrie, who's a trauma surgeon who he met whilst on assignment in Afghanistan, she's half Estonian and half Russian. So when their parents actually married, they were Soviet citizens, and then there was this hostile separation. So the father and the mother are fighting all the time. Carrie's the result, and they live in Brooklyn. So she doesn't have a hearth or home, really, and Rake does have one. And there's all of that thing of, you know, Valerie, where do you belong? When you close your eyes and think, where do you belong? Do you have a sort of place?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's here. I'm a native Estonian, so.
Okay. Yes. You're a native Estonian, did you say?
Yes.
Are you really?
Houstonian.
That's too much of a coincidence. A Houstonian, yes. Yeah. So I got diverted. Then and then the third one, which is Man on Fire, that begins mm-hmm. again on the Little Diomede Island with a firefight between the Russians and Americans. It ends with this possible bomb in space. You know, we just heard about the Russians possibly putting a nuclear weapon in space.
Yes. Well,
all that information is in the book, because the people that know how that worked, I interviewed them and did everything for that. And we do a scenario, talking about Houston, of what would happen in the oil refinery section of Houston along the waterfront there if this nuclear mm-hmm. weapon went off. And we picked Rakers and a new, he'd done a war game in Houston there with that. And then the last one is called Ice Islands, because I'd ran out of titles for a man on something. And we did Ice Islands. And that is based, that begins in the Baltic Sea in an island that's in a Finnish island. And it ends up on the Kuril or Northern Territory Islands that run between Russia and Japan. And not many people know, I didn't know it, is that Japan and Russia are technically still at war. Really? They have a ceasefire. They don't have a peace treaty. And these islands are disputed. And if you had seen the James Bond film, the latest one, Not a Good Place to Die, or No Time to Die, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. They were set on those same islands. So that was it.
Well, I really, really love that you incorporate not only your political knowledge, your geographical knowledge, and all of your work experience all into these characters and even into the storyline. Do you even have to do research? Or all of these are personal experiences or just personal knowledge? How does that come together?
I think it comes like you think of the idea. So the idea came from that journalist trip I took to the US-Russian border. And when I talk to people about it, they think, well, it's an original character. I don't think that there is a sort of global character, a global hero, you know, that's a native Alaskan that has got all those skills that those people had. And then a lot of it, say the Carrie Rake relationship, comes from my experience as a foreign correspondent. You know, two people fall in love, when they're out on the, you know, in Somalia or Iraq or something, and it's all terribly sexy and exciting and that. And then they get back to Brooklyn or London and they've got a mortgage and they've got kids and they're packing the kids in the car for a 5-hour drive. And they think, they think, I really don't want to do this. I want to go back and save the world.
Amy saves the world every day.
Yeah, exactly. So that is a sort of an experience. The characters are composites of people, you know how it is. So I might take you as a character, Valerie, but mix it with Sandy and Amy, and then God knows what will come out of the tube. It'll be somebody interesting and compelling and captivating.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Sandy, did you have any questions you'd like to throw in there?
Well, I've just been looking over your website now for a while, and there is so much there to look at. So I know you had the one series you just talked about. You have another series as well, though, right? Or one more, or more than one series?
Yes, I have. I have that series that I've just done. I did a series. We're going back 25 years. My first ever book, which we now call the Dragon Strike Future History Series, which I'm in the process now of getting a rights reversion to, or getting them to republish them, because it's so salient as to what's going on at the moment. And the books that are up on Kindle are still selling well. So Dragon Strike was the first book that I ever did. And I was then the BBC correspondent in Beijing. We're back in the mid-90s now. And when you're a BBC correspondent of a certain age, or a foreign correspondent of a certain age, you think that you should do a worthy thing and get a book under your belt. So I'd written this thing out about Wither China or Wither Human Rights or something. And it was a non-fiction book, and it had sections and chapter headings. And my agent, who is still my agent, I have to say, said, oh, well, I'll take you to see a publisher on it. You know, it looks like we could do something. So I went into the office of Sidgwick and Jackson, a military publishing company that had just been taken over by Macmillan, which is a much bigger company. And I went into the office, and there's a wonderful, wonderful publisher there who I'd never heard of. And he had sort of statues and awards and whatever around his office. And he had this piece of paper in front of me and looked at me. And he said, well, you know, I'm looked at what you've said. It's very well written. Said, I could publish this and we could maybe sell a few hundred copies, maybe 1,000. And he pushed it like that and it fluttered into the bin. And I looked at my agent and I said, what on earth are we doing here? You know, the guy doesn't want to do this at all. And then he leaned across to me like this and he looked, but tell me, could you write a book about America going to war with China? And I thought, I'm a journalist. If my editor wants something, I'll do it. So I said, yes. And I came, I did a, I took a co-author on that because they wanted it like yesterday, because Hong Kong was about to be handed back and to Britain and everything. And we did a book called Dragon Strike, which was about that. And that was to be a standalone, but then they wanted another. So we did Dragon Fire, which was about India, basically, and Pakistan and China having a war. And then I did the Third World War, which was about Russia, India, China, and the US mainly, getting themselves into situations that they couldn't get out of. And the reason that we're now thinking about redoing it is because, although it's 25 or 20 years after, the situations are pretty much exactly the same, where countries and leaders paint themselves into positions that they can't back down from. And that's where we are at the moment. And I only hope it doesn't unfold into the Third World War.
I feel like reality is probably just fueling the fire for you, for your imagination, just...
Well, yeah, doesn't it get depressing, though? I mean, you know, people want to find an out to this. Mm-hmm. And with social media, and we all get battered by, this is why Amy needs to have her cutoff time for the weekends. We get battered by this stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us, particularly, you know, I don't watch the news anymore. because it just goes round and round in circles. And as you get older, I'm of a certain generation, the people that are making the comments and sitting as the pundits, they think it's all new, but actually it's not. we've seen it all before.
Yes. Yeah. And I noticed that you had a TV documentary. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've done several TV documentaries for the BBC. The one that I did that we did with a book was, it was post-Iraq, and I was doing a lot of work in Iraq and around there. And I did a book called Democracy Kills, What's mm-hmm. So Good About Having the Vote? And that was a book looking into this idea that you can take away a dictator, which we did in Iraq, and then suddenly this panoply of good things will float down from heaven and you will have an uncorrupt court system and the fire brigade will work and you make a call to the police and they come and all the rest of it, like it does in our countries. And the more I wrote it, the more I became convinced about my own argument, actually, because we did, it took in Latin America, it took in Southeast Asia, Europe with the Balkan Wars, and the way that we in the West didn't understand how mm-hmm. cultures worked and how people worked there. Just as it had come out, I gave it to an American friend of mine. When we were having lunch, I said, I've just done this book, you know, here's a copy. And she threw it back at me. Mm-hmm. And she said, how can you say this? And I said, what do you mean? I said, it's about just what I've said. And she said that her cousin was a first responder in 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I said, I said, I understand that feeling, but why can't you address the issues of mm-hmm. this? We haven't spoken since then. And not because, you know, I always talked, but that made me realize, I think more than anything, because it's always the personal thing, that this word democracy has become a sort of ideology, really, hasn't it? And people throw it out. And even now, you know.
Especially now, maybe.
Say again?
Especially now.
And it's getting more and more like that. And I thought, you know, because I go to these conferences and these things, the issue that I raised in that and that other people raise is not being addressed. You know, mm-hmm. it's still not being addressed. And I don't know. And that's why maybe I get a bit jaded and I should go away and write a cozy crime thing, shouldn't I? And
Well, I really like the diversity in your work. It's incredible, just the range of, you know, like you have the nonfiction and then all the political thrillers and then just, you know, everything you're moving on to with this, even this new series. How do you feel about your body of work?
Incomplete. Mm-hmm. I think, in fact, I was thinking today, I don't know about you guys, you know, you sort of get up in the morning and you think, oh, that person I said the wrong thing to at school 100 years ago, I shouldn't have been so nice or nasty to them. You know, there's this thing that sort of batters you in. I was thinking that, you know, I just want to get the next, I'm working on one book that's under an NDA, so I can't really talk about it. And I think I just want to get that across the line and then want to do this, want to do that. Mm-hmm. I would certainly wouldn't be resting on the laurels of anything, mm-hmm. but they're all works in motion, actually, because I suspect I will do another one in the Dragon Strike series, or at least bring those books out again with new introductions to them. Showing that what the world thought 25 years ago is exactly what's happening now and probably what was happening 500 years ago, because the human mindset doesn't change. And I'd love Rake to do more Rakes. I'm going to bring him. I don't know where to bring him to next. I might do him down in the chocolate trade in, I did a lot of stuff in West Africa, where I broke stories about children being used in slavery in the chocolate industry down there.
And that's at the top of the headlines just recently too.
Yeah, it has been. It has been. And I'm still sort of attached to that, to that cause, really, because the I went down there and firstly, I went to an NGO's place and said, Humphrey, you really have to do a story on this. There are these children that are being trafficked and kidnapped and beaten up and made to farm the cocoa, which is being used by these big companies. And that's a 25-year-old project or something that's going on there.
So are you an active journalist now? Or are you kind of retired from that and moving on towards just being an author? Or what is your...
Valerie, you're drilling into my deep vulnerable psychology, aren't you?
I know. I guess I'm a journalist as well, and I feel like I can never turn it off. And I'm like, that's a great story. I want to write about that. I want to do that. I need to research that. But you know, if you don't have an outlet, then you're like, well, okay, I'll do something else with it. And that's maybe, are you doing something else with it if you're not out in the field?
You see, you've answered my question for me. When I'm out, even years ago, when I was out on a story, however big that story was, for the first bit, you like it because you're hitting the headlines all the time. And then you think, well, maybe I should stop this because I've got this book under contract to finish. When you're sitting writing the book and a big thing happens, like Ukraine or Gaza or something like that, you think, what the hell am I sitting writing this book for when I should be out there? Is this how the human being is made?
Yes. it's in, you would say it's in your nature. You just can't turn it off.
No, you can't. I can't turn it off. And I tried to, and I can't sit and become completely engrossed. Say I was doing a cozy crime, Agatha Christie type of thing. Not that I could do it like her, but giving a go at that. I don't think I would be able to do it very well, actually, because you would have to be thinking about who stole this piece of jewelry from so-and-so when bigger things are happening in the world.
Absolutely. And we can find your books across the board anywhere, Amazon.
Yeah, they're on Amazon. I think that The Man on Ice has been, and as I think we all know, you can't control these things. So Man on Ice, I think, is on a Kindle's free or something at the moment. They're all on Kindle, on Amazon, and orderable for the, in hardback for those who don't do Kindle. Yeah.
Nice. Sandy, closing questions, statements, comments from you.
This has been very, very good. I really enjoyed it. Humphrey, I'm sorry that I had not heard about you years ago, so I could have been reading this already. But I'm just really impressed with, I'm still on your website. And all the different sections you have journalism, your books, your diary, your blog, your podcast, and then all the photos. And I mean, it's just very, very well done. I'm very impressed. So, so good luck. I mean, I just know you're going to have even more of a huge future. And I look forward to, being on the show again with you sometime.
But you reminded me, so I got so carried away that I forgot to mention, because Mickey has given me some wonderful guests for the Goldster Inside Story shows that we do that become the podcasts, which is a bit like this show, except I think we're slightly more, it's just a one-on-one there. But we've had some fantastic people on, like Tosca Lee and Roger Leslie we had on.
I saw that.
Yeah, and they have been really some incredible, and taking us way out of our comfort zone, because Mickey gives me somebody, and I think, I don't know what cyberpunk is as a genre. I mean, do you guys know? We probably do.
I didn't know that until, so have you talked to Mark then? Because I didn't know that until after I met Mark, and I learned about this whole new genre that was going on. It's wonderful to hear, and those authors are so passionate about that genre that it makes me love it through them. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I think always step out of your comfort zone with that one. And our demographic, we're a 50-plus demographic on the Goldster podcast. They loved it. And then one of them said that she went away and she talked to her grandchildren about it, and they were so impressed that she was into cyberpunk.
So, oh, see, yeah. I love it. You just never know what, yeah. you know, is going to build that relationship or that bond between you and another person. And yeah. it really is all through words and authors and genres, right? Yeah, that's what is so fascinating. That's why we love it. And that's why we do it here on Author Talk. And I love to hear about your show and Roger being on with Tosca Lee and just everybody. And you're kind of experiencing that. You're just more one-on-one, but you're experiencing that as well. And I love to hear that and to hear the stories and to listen to your show. Mm-hmm. So I'm so excited and grateful that you're doing that, because it's amazing. I love your show. Absolutely. I listen to it all the time. So
we'll have to get you guys on.
Yeah,
there's three shows I could book there straight away. Yeah,
there you go. I love it. But Humphrey, it's always so much fun when you come on and hang out and talk to us. Your career has been amazing. Your books are amazing. I own The Man on Ice, and I did read it. My husband's currently reading, and it is an amazing book. So I highly recommend starting with that one. So it is always such an honor and a privilege to get to have you on. So thanks for taking time out of your afternoon to come and hang out with us this morning. It's always so much fun.
Thank you, Amy, Sandy, and Valerie. And I am now going to get a donut on my way.
Yes.
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 Yes. Oh, just get the donut hole. Remember the donut hole? Yes.
Until next Monday, you guys, we hope you all have a fantastic rest of this Monday, a great rest of this week. But until then, bye for now, everybody.
Bye.